What would happen to your family if you or a loved one were to be diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's disease today? And what would happen to your financial plan? I'm Oscar Lynn Elder, Head of Investment Management at Truist Wealth. And this is I've Been Meaning to Do That, a podcast from Truist Wealth, a purpose-driven financial services organization. We appreciate you listening. Today, we're talking about why planning for the possibility of dementia matters to all of us. What does it mean to plan for dementia care in a thoughtful and proactive way? Our guest is Annalee Krueger, an expert on the subject of caregiving, the founder of the education and advisory firm CareRight, Inc., and the author of The Invisible Patient, The Emotional, Financial, and Physical Toll on Family Caregivers. Welcome to I've Been Meaning to Do That, Annalee.
Thank you so much for having me, Oscar Lynn.
Annalee, let's first make sure we're on the same page regarding terminology. What is dementia and how does it relate to Alzheimer's disease?
A lot of people get those terms confused or they'll use them interchangeably. So dementia is a cluster of symptoms that impact day-to-day living, forgetfulness, short-term memory loss. Those are clusters of symptoms that negatively impact someone's day-to-day functioning. Alzheimer's is a form of dementia, and there are tons of different types of dementia, like Parkinson's disease can be a dementing illness. Mild cognitive impairment is a dementing illness. Alzheimer's is a form of dementia, but all of them are a progressive disease process. So they're not going to get better. And that's where families get a little stuck.
So the key is they're all progressive. It's an umbrella of perhaps different expressions of a progressive disease.
Correct. And so the takeaway is that it's not going to get better. So That's, I'm glad that we're talking about this today because this impacts millions of families across the world.
It does. And so why don't you tell us about your experience with caregiving? Because you've obviously focused a lot around caregiving within your career. And how has that experience shaped your career specifically and the way that you address dementia and aging with individuals and families who work with you?
Yeah, my grandparents actually lived with us on the farm in Iowa when we were growing up, because back in the 70s, there wasn't all this home care, there wasn't independent living, there wasn't assisted living. So seniors at that time, they either failed and died at home, or they moved in with their kids, or they went to a nursing home because that was essentially their three options. So I was fortunate and grateful to be able to have my childhood with my grandparents, both sets of grandparents. And I saw from a very young age how aging can just be so different for two different people. So like my grandfather, he didn't need care. He just needed the socialization aspect of living with us. We didn't have to do any hands-on care for him at all. He just needed to be around people so that he could thrive. My grandmother, on the other hand, she was very, very ill and she had chronic pain. And so with that, she also had a lot of depression. And so I saw very different formats of aging. And my grandmother, she needed all help with all activities of daily living. So that's what shaped me into thinking, I really love working with seniors and families. And unfortunately, about 2 years after my grandparents moved in, my oldest sister, who had gone off to college, became a missing person. And I saw how mom and dad had to struggle with, okay, we've got to go try to find her daughter, but we've also taken in these two vulnerable adults as well. So I saw how life has its own agenda and family caregivers are pulled in all sorts of different directions and really trying hard to maintain the commitments that they made to grandparents or parents, but also have to be responsible for the rest of their family as well. And that's what shaped me into realizing in third grade that I wanted to become basically a social worker. I just didn't know what it was called back then because I was little. And that's all I've ever done is worked with families and long-term care.
So you really experienced firsthand a sandwich generation.
I did. Yes. I just saw firsthand from a very young age how this whole caregiving thing impacts families, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
People often recognize dementia and Alzheimer's as serious health risks of aging. But you say families often overlook key points about the financial risks of these diseases. Can you talk about that, the financial element?
Sure. You know, dementing illnesses are one of the most expensive diseases because they're long-term. Someone with dementia, that can be a 20, 30-year disease progression. And we know that those folks with dementia are going to need 24/7 care. The challenge is that it's the family that provides the bulk of that care until they get so utterly burned out, where it's just affecting their careers, their lives, their health, that's often when they turn to hiring professional caregivers. And it's quite pricey, but you know, that's the quandary that families are in when they have a long-term disease progression like that. And not understanding how care gets paid for is another challenge that I see with families. A lot of families, unfortunately, assume that Medicare is going to pay for everything. And they think Medicare and Medicaid are the same program. So financially, they're not equipped or prepared because they're assuming someone else is going to pay for all of that care. It's when they start engaging in paying for home care and cutting those checks for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 per month that they're like, oh my gosh, how are we going to do this long term? And so then they start looking at senior care facilities, and those aren't cheap either. So that's the financial risk, is we have to plan ahead and think things through proactively, preferably, versus waiting until crisis mode.
And Annalee, there may also be another element of the burden, which would be kind of the lost income related to the individual who may be caregiving or the group of individuals, because often the caregiver is foregoing or leaving their job or cutting back hours or, you know, doing something, bringing something in so that they can spend time with the individual who's experiencing dementia.
For sure. The financial toll for the family caregiver is enormous. A lot of my sons or daughters or spouses who are caregiving, they usually get thrust into caregiving and they're ill-prepared. You know, the financial toll is significant. Like you've mentioned, a lot of families are taking FMLA. They're quitting their jobs. They're not taking the job promotion that they wanted because they're like, I can't travel and have more responsibility when I'm trying to take care of two or three or four elderly loved ones, right? My typical client has six people that they're kind of in charge of. They've got in-laws, they've got, you know, Aunt Bessie who never got married or had kids. And they're like, oh, you're so good with all these other elderly loved ones that we have. Let's just throw Bessie on your roster too. And the sons and daughters are like, look, this isn't Thanksgiving. There's not always room for one more, you know? Right. And so the financial toll is significant. And we haven't even talked about what I call the rescue missions. Our typical families are spending out of pocket at least $15,000 a year coming for rescue missions. Because if you live in New York and you have to get to Phoenix, Arizona tomorrow because dad fell, or mom's a caregiver to dad with Alzheimer's and she just had a stroke, that airfare isn't $69. You know, that's expensive, and that's the toll on your career. Like a lot of our women caregivers, they stayed home to take care of their kids. And now they're finally getting their career on track. And now mom had a stroke or dad's dementia progressed. And they're like, I just am finally getting my foot in the door at the company that I wanted to work at. And now they're having to, you know, jeopardize and sacrifice some of their career as well.
That's a lot to juggle.
And every week I talk to either spouses or adult kids who took early retirement, not because they wanted to, but because they didn't know that there was a solution like an aging plan. So they took early retirement to now become a full-time caregiver. And they're very resentful. They end up being very resentful because soon after they quit their job, they realize they're really in over their head as a caregiver. They're like, wow, I did not realize my husband's needs were going to be so significant. Or you've got sons trying to bathe their mothers. And it's, you know, this is the predicament families find themselves in. They get thrust into caregiving. They don't have an aging plan. And now they've quit their job or retired. And now that resentment starts to fit in because they often think siblings are going to help with caregiving, to find out they're kind of on their own sometimes, depending on the family dynamics.
So you've mentioned aging plan a couple of times. Share with us what you mean by that.
To me, it just makes perfect sense. Like, why wouldn't you put a plan in place for the most vulnerable, years of your life when you're going to be dependent on other people to help take care of you. So when I talk about an aging plan, it's facilitating family meetings as a neutral third-party meeting facilitator. What's working well? What's not working well? You can imagine, Oscar Lynn, when families call me, it's not because they're like, oh, you sounded so cool on this podcast. We just wanted to get ahead of this aging stuff. No, it's crisis. Like, mom right. just had a stroke. What do we do? And so what's working well? What's not working well in the current situation? Usually things aren't going well. So there's dementia involved or a stroke or the primary caregiver died or just the kids are just plain burned out and they're just done. And so we have to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of, okay, what are the goals as you age? And for us, our client is the whole family because everybody's input matters. And so we talk about, okay, mom and dad, Ethel and Marvin, what are your goals as you age? And they'll all say the same thing. I want to age in place at home, and I don't want to be a burden on my kids. But it's always the kids reaching out to us, right? And so the kids, when I ask them, what are your goals for your parents? It is always a variation of the same thing, but it's always safety first.
Safety.
And that's why they're afraid, because they're like, I am not a caregiver. I'm not a nurse. I'm not, you know, I'm an engineer and here I'm doing wound care for mom. You know, it's not the right fit for their personality or their time that they have. And so when the kids say they want their loved ones to be safe, happy, have the best quality of life and the best quality of care possible, the only way to achieve those goals is to put a plan in place. So we educate families about the landscape of senior care. Let's talk about aging in place at home. What are the pros and cons of that? What if it's not safe? What if there's no care available? What if mom and dad can't afford $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month in care? And so we need to also outline care communities that at least on the surface would be a viable fit as far as what levels of care they offer, meaning what if mom needs assisted living but dad needs memory care? These are things that have to be talked about, preferably proactively. So we have to be realistic and have plan A, plan B, and plan C. We also need to look at, what do you have in order? Do you have living will, power of attorney, long-term care insurance? Do you have your grab-and-go binder? Do you have your accounts, your passwords? Do you have your funeral arrangements taken care of? What's your pet plan emergency in case you have a hospital stay? What are you going to do with your cat or your dog? If you're a business owner, what's your business succession plan? If you have a special needs child, what's the special needs information that someone would need to know if you become incapacitated? We also talk about, what is your aging in place at home care budget? So knowing that these senior care facilities, you have to financially qualify to get into those. And if you need $3 million or $10 million of net worth, then we need to reverse engineer and say, okay, how much money can we spend staying at home so we don't jeopardize our future care facility options?
We talk about an aging plan, and ideally it's proactive, but most people really start to experience more when they're in a crisis. Why is it so hard, especially around dementia, for folks to behave or think about it in a proactive way?
Denial, denial, denial.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked with over 20,000 families in my 30 plus career, and most of my families are in that dementia journey in some way, right? And so I've yet to work with a family who understands dementia. They tend to learn the hard way. Like, just as an example, they're like, well, I guess you don't argue with them. You know, I guess you don't try to tell them it's 2026 when they think it's 1971, you know? Right. And so they learn the hard way instead of, you know, being educated about the disease that they're dealing with. Or, you know, I never got along with my parents and now dad has dementia and mom had a stroke. And now I'm taking care of people that we have strained relationships going into it. So there's a lot of denial about, well, maybe mom and dad will get better, or maybe dad's just having a bad day, or dad's always been a little bit quirky. And it's not, unfortunately, until there's a drastic crisis that it kind of wakes them up. And it seems like it takes, in my experience, it seems like six is the number. It seems like it takes six falls or six somethings for families to really wake up and get out of denial and say, hey, you know what? Something's really going on here. We better try to get ahead of it, but they're already behind it.
What's the risk of waiting too long to call the family together to develop the aging plan?
Yeah, so here's what I can share with you, Oscar Lynn. 92% of our families come to us in crisis mode, right? 85% of those families, I'm doing family mediation with them. Because even the most close-knit families, aging, caregiving, and dementia can absolutely cause wedges in those, even the most best family relationships. And that's if you actually got along at one point. If families didn't get along to start with because Brother Joe said something stupid at Thanksgiving 25 years ago and now no one talks, but now there's a crisis, now the kids have to get reintroduced to each other and their parents and say, okay, what are we going to do now? And so the tone of those family meetings that's more proactive, where we're like, hey, we're starting to see the writing on the wall with mom and dad. They're not doing well. They've had a couple falls. That's when you need to start thinking, okay, we're just at the tip of the iceberg of what's going to happen as we age. The tone of those family meetings is so much more positive because they're not at each other's throats yet.
Right.
So the outcome is when you plan ahead, your family gets along better because now we're communicating. They're understanding the disease. They're understanding the lay of the land for senior care. They're understanding the cost of care. And our parents have better care outcomes because we're planning ahead. The tone for those who wait until they're in crisis mode, there's fighting, there's tears. It's not good. The family meetings are challenging and because there's a lot of emotion. And then unfortunately, that's when families wait until they're in crisis mode, their loved one's not going to get the best care possible because you get whatever care is available or whatever facility has an open bed. And one more quick note on that, because a lot of times parents don't have their power of attorney. They don't have their grab and go binder stuff. They don't have anything in order. And so when that crisis happens, the kids can't just put their fingertips on the power of attorney documents or the living will. They don't even know if it exists. So they have to fly to wherever their parent lives, rummage through a desk, try to find what they think they're looking for to get it to the doctor. So all of that can be prevented when we start putting an active, robust plan together now instead of in crisis mode.
I'm just kind of struck by how if you wait and you're in intense crisis, the amygdala gets hijacked.
Yes.
And you're trying to have this complicated communication. And your brain is just like, you're just trying to survive. And it's very difficult to have meaningful, peaceful, thoughtful conversation, communication when you're in that fight or flight stage. And what you're kind of advocating for is do it beforehand when your full brain can engage.
Right.
And you have some time to think and process and not be in complete reaction mode.
I've never, ever, ever, ever had a family ever come back to me and say, gosh, Annalie, I feel really confident about decisions that we had to make in crisis mode. When you're in crisis, you don't think clearly and you don't know what you don't know. And families make a lot of just tremendously awful mistakes because they don't know what they don't know. And it's sad.
Where do you see even like the well-prepared, the well-resourced families getting caught off guard when dementia enters the aging picture?
Dementia doesn't care how much money you have, right? So it's going to progress whether you have $100,000 or $30 million or $500 million. Dementia does not care. Yes, you might have the money to be able to afford care, but the challenge is on our end in senior care. We have a massive shortage of quality healthcare workers. The pandemic did a true number on our senior care industry. We had a lot of, and we still continue to have really good quality, compassionate healthcare workers leaving the industry in droves because they're just simply burned out. They're not treated very well, usually by the companies that they work for. And so that's where it's on our end as the senior care industry where families get in a snag because even if you do have money, it can still be challenging to try to find quality, properly trained, properly supervised healthcare workers. From a home care side, a lot of home care companies are not taking on new patients because they don't have the staff to staff them. And then the senior care homes, a lot of them, they have staffing and leadership issues. They have a massive turnover in leadership. And if there's no leadership, it's the wild, wild west in these care communities. And many of them have been cited for abuse and neglect year after year after year. And that's why we do aging planning, to show them, these are the care facilities in your area that have been cited for abuse and neglect. These are the ones that have the levels of care that you need or that you will need. We need to plan around that. And we also need to learn how to be a bold advocate. And that's great when families have the funds to be able to afford an advocate, because oftentimes as a family member, you just want to be the family member. You don't want to have to be the care advocate, the care patrol, the care coordinator, the care manager, the care provider. You just want to be the son or the daughter or the husband or the wife.
I think it's important context, because folks may think that it's relatively easy or simple to arrange the care, to work through the progression of care. And what I hear very clearly from you is that it is incredibly challenging. So don't underestimate that task and the level of lift that a family might need to do to frankly care for their loved one in the way that they want to.
Families aren't large like they used to be. You know, they don't have 8, 10, 12 kids anymore. And so when families are smaller, and we have the most solo agers that we've ever had so far in history, you know, where people didn't get married, or they outlived their spouse, or they didn't have children. They don't have a son or a daughter that they can call and say, hey, honey, I know it's 3 o'clock in the morning, but I fell and I need help getting up. There's no one for them to call. So we just need to understand the lay of the land. If the families are smaller, then there's less family caregivers, which then equates to less professional caregivers, right? And there's not a lot of huge incentive for people to go into senior care. The pay isn't great and they're not treated well. And society doesn't really embrace aging.
Annalee, you've given us a lot to think about. We've invited you here at Truist to give trainings to our advisors on this topic, because dementia and Alzheimer's can have such a big impact on wealth planning. What role can a financial advisor play in helping individuals and families manage these risks?
That is one of my favorite questions, actually, Oscar Lynn, because as you know, I've spent almost 2 decades focusing on training advisors. And I'm so grateful for Truist, for the advisors who have gone through my training so far. They're engaged, they're interactive, and they're like, wow, this is fantastic education, because advisors are realizing that their aging book of business has entirely different needs than when you onboarded Ethel and Marvin in their 30s or 40s. Now that they're in their 70s or 80s and they're really approaching potentially needing care, the conversations and the education need to be enhanced. So conversations for advisors, that I train advisors, start asking questions. Do not leave it up to your client to bring these things up. Like, the advisor needs to be proactive in starting these conversations. Are you a family caregiver? Is there anything in your personal life that's impacting your health, your career, your finances, your relationship, your life at home? What conversations have you had with your family about aging and the what whens of aging? What documents do you have in order? Where are the documents? Have you talked to your kids about the documents? Or if you're talking to Ethel and Marvin, what challenges might you be having at home? Can you get to the doctor? Is your car working okay? Do you need care? Have you had any falls?
We've heard it said before on our podcast that people plan with best case in mind versus base or even worst. And the other thing that comes to mind for me, and you've talked about how often families are in denial, folks may be in denial, is that a key role for an advisor often can be to provide a window or a mirror in an effective way to a client. And so asking a thought-provoking question, allowing clients to explore the answers to those questions, right? Helping guiding the conversation. Sometimes a voice that isn't a family voice is able to make an observation or ask a question in a way that begins to bring that wall of denial down.
Well, and often the advisor is the one getting the crisis call from the family. So the advisor is in a unique position to really add even more value than what they already do and say, you know what, this is a really overwhelming situation that you're in. I've got your financial plan in place. But again, just as important is here's a resource that can help you navigate this crisis that you're in. And so not trying to train them to be a family mediator or a social worker, but just start the conversation and then use that collaborative approach and don't feel like you have to have all the answers because you don't. Not everybody has all the answers.
Well, understanding the risk that dementia and Alzheimer's disease pose to our wealth plan is important, but we also want to take control of managing that risk. We'll talk about practical planning steps when we come right back. All right, Anna Lee, who really needs to have dementia care planning high on their priority list? And when should individuals and families start to think about it?
Well, given that there are millions of families in the dementia journey, seriously, everyone needs to be thinking about this. So priority people who should be thinking about it like this very second are people who already have a diagnosis and they already know that they have a dementing illness. Anyone who suspects that their loved one has some memory issues going on. And if you have a family history of dementing illnesses, those are three categories of people right out of the gate. If you're a solo ager, and this is something that you worry about is, what if I lose my memory? Who's going to take care of me? Where am I going to live? Do I have enough money? Because it's not like you can draw on a husband's Social Security, right? Like you got to have all this money yourself to be able to be self-supporting, to pay for care. So literally everybody needs to be thinking about dementia care.
And if you fall into the categories that you've talked about, even more so, like you really cannot afford to wait any longer. You need to engage and start planning. How is planning for dementia care different from other less disease-specific long-term care planning that you've seen?
Dementing illnesses or most dementias, like Alzheimer's, that's a long disease process most of the time, right? We're talking decades, and we know that those folks are going to need 24/7 care. Eventually, the caregivers, they're not going to be able to sleep through the night. They're going to have one ear and one eye open to make sure that mom's not wandering around. Like that's where we talk about the toll on the family caregiver. It's different taking care of someone who has a broken hip and will be hopefully back to baseline in 6 to 8 weeks. Now, if you're talking about people who have like ALS, those are intense, but they don't live very long when they have ALS. And so that's a very intense and more brief period of caregiving, but it's still intense. It's just not going to be years and years and years. If your spouse has MS, multiple sclerosis, that's going to be a decades-long disease as well, but it's typically not a dementing illness, but they'll need physical care. And so that's why I say in the beginning, you know, it's really important to know what disease you're actually trying to take care of so that you can be emotionally prepared, physically prepared, and financially prepared and not be blindsided.
Recap for us what you believe families really need to understand about the realities of in-home dementia care.
Most people want to age in place at home, and that's great if they can, but it's not always safe. And so when you think about home care, it's one thing if you're what we back in the day would call a walking, talking cutie. You're pleasant, you're cooperative, you follow through with what the caregivers want to help you with, like the bath and medications and meals. But it's a whole nother ballgame if, you know, you're in the throes of really extreme dementia and you've got paranoia, you're aggressive, you're violent, you're sexual, you're wandering out all of the time, you got your days and nights mixed up. It can be challenging trying to find a caregiver who wants to do a 12-hour shift with someone that's going to keep them on their toes or potentially be abusive to them. And so that's where there's challenges in trying to stay at home is the caregivers can choose which patients that they want to work with, right? And if your loved one, maybe they have just a very difficult personality and they're not nice to the caregiver isn't going to keep coming back for that. It can be challenging trying to find caregivers that are properly trained and patient and calm and know how to redirect dementia behaviors. It's very difficult to find that.
Let's take it to probably the next level. What would care in a memory care facility offer in terms of specialized support?
So the value proposition of like a properly run memory care, I always have to say that because so many facilities are not properly run. And so a properly run with proper leadership is an ideal option for someone in a dementia journey. They have their activities, their meals, their socialization. They have medication management. They have a doctor that comes, you know, these memory care units or care facilities have a physician that comes to see the patient in-house. So there's a lot of value that memory care units, they're specifically designed for people with memory issues. So they're not going to be a 100-bed memory care unit. They're going to be much smaller, more intimate, where they're just shorter wings, smaller wings, 6, 8, 10, 12 residents eating in a small dining room. Why I talk about the dining room is because we know that as dementia progresses, it can be very hard for us to get them to eat because they don't know that they're hungry or they'll eat things that aren't food. So the memory care units are specifically designed for what a dementia patient's needs are. And they're staffed accordingly because dementia patients need more. I don't want anyone thinking that it's one-on-one care because it is not, but it is a safe, structured unit.
Let's turn and talk a little bit more about solo agers.
Sure.
If I'm a solo ager, what do I need to be thinking about? And more importantly, I think, what do I need to do in order to prepare for a potential situation?
I can speak to this personally because I will very likely still be one because okay. I'm one now. No spouse, no kids. And I don't think my two senior dogs are really going to help a lot when I need help because they don't help with anything right now. So things that I have already put into place, and I'm 53 years old. And you have to realize I work with people who didn't do any planning or very little planning. And so I have to like help them put a better plan in place. So I probably have overplanned, but that's because I don't want to be vulnerable when I am the most sick and frail and dependent on someone because I can't advocate for myself. So make sure that you build your support system now in a diverse way. Don't have just friends that are your own age group because they're going to start dying too. So have a diverse age group of friends that live close by to where you think you're going to stay. And it's okay to even think about, okay, who else are solo agers that we can like be each other's power of attorney, for example. So that's step two. Step one is build out your social environment, build up your friendship network, whether it's usually the next question people ask is like, okay, but where do I find friends? Because it's hard to these days. So church or go on the activity website, like social activity platforms. There's activities for people to do. If you like to hike, you know, social activity platforms can be really helpful to find activities in your area. Bible study at the salon. If you like to travel, find people that you like to travel with. So build out your friendship and then start the conversations about, you know, if something happens to me, would you be my decision maker? But then the next step after that is like this process, right? The next step after that is you need to actually talk to whoever you appointed as the power of attorney. And this goes for everybody, solo wagers or anyone else. Like you actually have to let them know that you appointed them as the power of attorney and what your wishes are for end of life. You need to give them the documents for power of attorney for finances. Here's the people that you need. Here's my long-term care insurance representative. You know, so prepare them so that they have the information at their fingertips. And then the other thing to think about is, okay, when you need care, we're starting to see, or I've been noticing the last decade probably of solo agers, they're leaving their homes proactively when they don't need care to move into like independent living because that's another avenue to develop relationships and friendships.
Right. Well, thank you for sharing your observations about what folks are doing. And importantly, I think the call to action for potential solo agers is, you know, think about it, but actually start to do and to follow through. Because again, once you're in a position of crisis, it becomes too late to plan ahead. And at that point, you're reacting and the folks around you are reacting. So be proactive as much as possible.
And I know we've talked, and I'm not an attorney, so I just want to say that. But I'm just saying, from what I see, families are not getting their advanced directives done until after the crisis, you need to make the job of the power of attorney easy instead of like, oh, I can't believe Anna Lee left me all this junk that I have to do and I don't know how to do it. And it takes a bazillion hours of time to figure things out, right? So be responsible. And this is for everyone. Get everything in order now to make the life easier for those that are going to have to pick up where you left off.
Well, let's turn and talk about your book, The Invisible Patient. You say that protecting the caregiver is essential to a successful plan. What does that look like in practical terms?
Yeah, so we always, always, always have to safeguard that family caregiver, whether it's 82-year-old Ethel, who also has her own health issues and she's trying to take care of Marvin, or you're the son or the daughter and you get thrust into caregiving. We always have to safeguard that family caregiver. The invisible patient is that caregiver. And that's why I wrote the book, because, you know, even when I was caregiving for my own family, they're always like, well, how's your mom or how's your dad? And I'm like, they're doing great, but I'm not.
Right.
You know, and so self-care, and I think this is an important thing to talk about, you know, self-care preservation for the caregiver. Self-care means different things to different people. For example, I'm an introvert. I'm kind of a loner. I'm a homebody. So for me to go to a concert, that would stress me out. But if you give me a book and a glass of wine and a, you know, cello music, that's my jam, right? Most caregivers, we're in survival mode. We're just trying to make sure dad is safe or that mom doesn't wander out. You're just living hour to hour and you can't even think about next week because you're just trying to get through today. So we don't want that for the caregiver. That's not good quality of life. We also need to keep tabs on our caregivers and be proactive and say, we haven't seen you at Bible study or we haven't seen you at book club. Tell me what's going on in your life and how can we help you? And if you're a caregiver listening to this, one of the things that we're terrible about is reaching out for help. We all think that we should just be doing this and not complain about it. So give yourself grace and be patient with yourself. Step away when you can. Use respite services. Lean on other people so that you don't end up depressed, anxious, isolated, and have your own health issues.
Well, Anna Lee, what's really striking about all of this is how much difference timing and preparation can make. We'll come back in just a moment for some final thoughts. Anna Lee, you know better than most how daunting the idea of proactive planning for dementia care can be for some people. What's one step a listener can take now to get started?
Realize that we don't get healthier as we age. So start the conversations or start thinking now. Like take some time, put some space into your day to think about, if I had a stroke today, how prepared am I? Do I have my documents in order? What conversations have I had with my kids, if you have kids? If you are a solo ager, this is the time to be thinking about, if I need care, where am I going to go? What if we can't stay at home? If you live in a house that's like a tri-level, maybe now is the time to be thinking about, is this house going to serve my needs if I need a walker or if I need a wheelchair? Maybe you don't live in an area where there's a lot of care. Maybe now is a time to be thinking about a relocation so that you have time to adjust and meet new people before care is needed. And for sure, I can't stop harping on this. Make sure you get your grab and go. Get all of your documents, your accounts, get all of that prepared now, because that is daunting. But if you start doing it and get, say, okay, this month I'm going to work on getting all of my accounts and passwords. Next month I'm going to get my funeral arrangements taken care of. You know, piece it down so it doesn't feel so overwhelming.
Well, you've given us a lot to think about and a lot to do. And we just really appreciate your expertise and your passion and purpose comes through very clearly.
Thank you.
In all that you're doing. So thank you for sharing that with me and with our listeners. I know that you've impacted and will impact many people by the advice that you're giving today. Before we wrap up, we have a tradition here at I've Been Meaning to Do That. We ask all of our guests, what's the one thing that you've been meaning to do that you haven't done yet and that you're willing to commit to do now with our audience listening?
So I love that question because I just bought my house and so I got my trust documents. So now I need to review the trust documents and make sure that there's no edits. And then I need to go to the bank and fund the trust. So those are, okay. That's actually on my to-do list tomorrow.
Fantastic. Interestingly, that comes up a lot with our guests that they have estate planning trust documents mm-hmm. that they either want to put in place or that they're reviewing, waiting to finalize. So I think you're in great company. A lot of folks need to do this. What's really encouraging is that like you have it ready to go. All you have to do is proof it and then get it across the finish line. So best of luck on that.
Thank you.
Annalee, thank you again for joining me today.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to ask all these different questions and have this dialogue. It's so needed because families are continually getting caught off guard and they don't know that there's a resource that can help them. And advisors, your team is amazing. So I'm so thankful and grateful for our relationship.
Listeners, I want to thank you as well. If you liked this episode, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. And tell friends and family about it. If you have a question for me or a suggestion for this podcast, email me at dothat@truist.com. I'll be back soon for another episode of I've Been Meaning to Do That, the podcast that gets you moving toward fulfilling your purpose and achieving your financial goals. Talk to you soon.
Oscar Lynn Elder is an investment advisor representative, Truist Advisory Services Incorporated. Any comments or references to taxes herein are informational only. Truist and its representatives do not provide tax or legal advice. You should consult your individual tax or legal professional before taking any action that may have tax or legal consequences.